Past hour, number one, back here on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-966-POTUS. You know, I've been anxiously awaiting talking to this gentleman because, believe it or not, I am a fan. He served as the United States Senator from West Virginia from 2010 to 2025. He is out with a new memoir called Dead Center, In Defense of Common Sense. I love that title. I'm talking about the one and only Joe Manchin, right here with yours truly. How are you, sir? Good evening. How's everything going?
Everything's great, Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's great to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking time to be on this show.
I think you just had my friend on, Megyn Kelly. I mean, she's wonderful.
She's the best. She's the real deal. I'm a huge fan of Megyn Kelly, no doubt about it. Let me ask you this, sir. How do you feel? It's day one of the government shutdown. I had to start that off by asking you about it. I'm frustrated. I know this par for the course. It's happened before. It happened a few years ago. I'm just disgusted that we're here. Maybe I'm new to this, and that's the reason why. Your thoughts about the state of affairs right now?
Well, I would never vote for a shutdown, because what you're saying when you vote to let it, or you either let it shut down or you vote for a shutdown, what you're saying is, I can't do my job, so I'm going to make 300 million people suffer. That's basically what you have said, and I've never done that. I will say this, the ruling party, whoever's in control, if the Democrats, when Joe Biden was there and they had the House and the Senate, their responsibility is to run the government. The Republicans' responsibility is to run the government. And that means you give and take a little bit, but your responsibility is to run it. And there's no excuse for shutting it down and then playing the blame game. That doesn't work. You know, what happens, Stephen, is when you have the leaders, two leaders in the Senate, whoever the majority leader and whoever's the minority leader. Mm-hmm. So right now it's Chuck Schumer and it's Chuck Schumer. There might be some bad blood there. Maybe they don't have the closest of relationships. I would always get three or four Democrats, three or four Republicans, and we just go marching into their office and say, listen, this has got to stop. We've got to get together. We can make a deal here. And what they're trying to do is saying on the Affordable Care Act, going back to pre-COVID, and then all the expenditures and how we raised the limits and took care of people that were making higher incomes. COVID supplemental funds were intended for what we call the working people who are struggling at the lower end of the work scale.
Okay.
Making the 30, 40, 50, 60, under 100, okay?
Okay.
They needed. Let me tell you in poverty, Stephen, how it works. Before we had the Affordable Care Act, what would happen is somebody was working for $35,000 a year. They couldn't afford to pay the copay at their employers. They said, we're offering you insurance, but you have to pay $150 a month. It was just too tight. They couldn't do it. You know what they would do? If they got sick, they would go to work and claim workers' comp, so it would pay. They'd go to the emergency room because that's all they had to offer, and that was the highest in delivery. So the Affordable Care Act helped a lot of the working people who are in the lower end of the scale. When they expanded when they expanded it because of COVID, we were expanding it because nobody was working then, up to people who made 400%. We were at 100 to 150% before. That's what's got to change. Just some common sense. Let's go back and do what's right. Don't just wipe it out completely.
Joe Manchin, educate me about something, and excuse my ignorance, but I was under the impression that when the Affordable Care Act came into play, when that was something that was a mission of Obama and the Democrats, that it was supposed to save us money. It was supposed to save health care to some degree, and obviously get millions of more affordable health care. Yet the Democrats going to the table and they're looking to add an extra $1.5 trillion, apparently, according to what I've read, looking for some numbers in that range or whatever. Am I missing something here? Is the Affordable Care Act not working nearly as effectively as once pronounced?
Well, Affordable Care Act, I was never a big fan of it, and I thought we could make it better. I was a governor at the time and they passed it in 2009. But I remember Max Baucus, and I was head of the Democrat Governors Association. We had about nine governors on. He was trying to sell us. And that bill really divided the country, started dividing the country. Republicans were going to their corner. They wanted Democrats to go to their corner. And I was asking Max Baucus that night on the telephone. I says, Max, Let me make sure I understand this. You're going to force everybody to buy this insurance, and there's no options. They can't shop anything. You buy this, and if you don't buy what you're offering, you're going to fine them. And I said, Max, that might work in Montana, doesn't work in West Virginia. So I knew there had to be some adjustments, but I can tell you how it did help small rural hospitals who didn't have the income because they were treating so many people that were uninsured, Stephen. So we were able now to keep hospitals in operation, helping rural areas where the poor mostly had lived. So it did that. But what happened in 2020 when we had the COVID, that's when things flew off the handle, buddy, went off the rail.
And it
And
flew and it flew off the rails because why? Specifically, explain that to our audience. Why did it flow off the rails?
well, the thing, everything fell off the rail. We're not the same country we were before COVID because people became more dependent on government. I've always said government should be your partner, not your provider. But during COVID, no one could work. We were basically, condemned, putting everybody in and holding them hostage in their own homes, And so everybody kept saying, I'll never forget this, David. They said, you know what? When we had this shutdown, the 208, 209 banking crisis, Barack Obama and the Democrats should have put more money into the system quicker to recover. And in 2020, it was bipartisan. Trump was president. We put $3.2 trillion additional into the market. Now, we run the country on about $5.5 trillion. We put $3.2 trillion in, okay? And trying to keep things going. That was everybody said had to be done. Looking hindsight being 2020, we did absolutely the wrong thing, putting that much in. And there's no work requirements. So now we got people getting checks, not working. Inflation comes. Inflation came because we had a vaccine that worked, but no one was going back to work. So anything you wanted, you were paying higher because there's no distribution. The distribution system had failed. Everything had fallen off and everything became much higher and the prices had never gone down. They start subsidizing an awful lot more than they should. Everything that we do from government should be based around the work. People that are working and trying hard to get ahead and need some assistance, that's fine. People that don't want to go to work at all, that's not fine. And that's what the problem is right now. But this would be very helpful if they could get back to pre-COVID and they can make a deal there. That's not hard to make a deal. Say, okay, pre-COVID, now they want to put an extra $1 trillion, as you just said. Since then, can we ratchet that back? Here's the thing with government, Stephen. No matter what you think you did wrong, it's harder to take it back. So they should have sat down in the room, and I hope they're doing that tonight. They should be, and saying, okay, guys, we can't go back all at once. You can't just take it all away at one time. We've got people conditioned. It's in the system now. Let's do it over 3 years. We'll take a third back this year, a third back next year, and a third back the year after. We'll wipe it out completely. We'll get back to pre-COVID or 50-50, 2 years. There's a deal to be made. Just sit down and talk.
Yeah, and that's the problem. They don't sit down and talk. They just go on
No, they
TV
don't.
and engage in performative behavior, trying to get one up with the audience
You got
out
it.
there. It's ridiculous. It really is. It just gets on my last damn nerves. Last question about this subject before I get into your book, because I got to get into your book here.
Yes, we
Americans,
got it.
that's right.
We
Americans,
got to sell the book. We got to
that's right.
sell the
We
book.
trust. Don't worry about it, because I got a lot to ask you about that book. But Americans
Okay.
must now brace for what could be a prolonged federal shutdown. What point? What political points, if any at all, are gathered courtesy of a shutdown?
None. Nobody wins in a shutdown. But I can tell you, at the end of the day, the ruling party, the Republicans have the trifecta in Washington. They've got the executive branch and the legislative branch. Okay? And they have also the House and the Senate. So you have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. That's a trifecta. And they're going to be held more accountable and responsible. They can blame all they want to. But your responsibility as a leader in this free country of ours with a representative form of democracy is to make it work. What you're saying is we can't have a representative form of government because we can't find representatives that basically are representing we the people. I always said, show me someone that'll put their country before their party, and I will be for them. I don't care if they're Democrat, Republican, or independent. I'm going to support them. But I can tell the people that go there for fortune and fame, and put the party loyalty before their country. And the oath of office means nothing. We all take the oath of office, Stephen, to protect and defend the Constitution. And as a senator for 15 years, I never worked for a president. I never worked for Harry Reid or Chuck Schumer or Mitch McConnell. I kept my oath to office to protect and defend the Constitution, and I had to go home and explain it. You want me to vote for something I can't explain? I can't go home. That's the people I work for.
Right.
I'm representing them. And that's the government. If you can't do that, then we're not going to be able to have this representative form of democracy, which has been great for 240 years.
Yeah. Joe Manchin, former senator out of West Virginia, right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Let's get to your book now, right now, sir, Dead Center, In Defense of Common Sense. First of all, I applaud the title. I applaud you for writing it. I want you to tell our audience, number one, why you're writing this now. How come we didn't see this book a couple of years ago? And number two, what do you think will be gained by writing this now?
Well, I wrote the book, you know, it's just been, we wrote it a while ago. It just came out. It takes a while to get it back in circulation. So we were writing it back my last year that I was in the Senate. And I thought coming through those unbelievable 2 years, and 2021 through 2023, when it was a 50-50 Senate and everything came down to my vote, one vote.
Yep.
And I've told them all, I said, listen, every senator has the same power. It's one vote. You vote up or you vote down. That's all you do, Stephen. Mm-hmm. I'm for it or I'm against it. Not that hard. But what happened is most of them had already gone to their respective corners. And I'd always been very independent. If the Republicans had a good idea, I would vote for them. I never campaigned against a sitting colleague. When a Republican was running for re-election, I would never campaign against him. I would never give any money to anybody running against someone I was working with. I could not do that. I thought it was hypocritical. And I never would do that. So I was always that go-to in-between person. They come, hey, Joe, we need something bipartisan. Can you work with us? And I was able to negotiate a little bit and hopefully smooth things out a little bit. And that's all I did. But I come from a state that expected that. I never knew. I'll give you one quick story.
Please.
Harry Reid comes to me, 2011. He said, Joe, we're going to have a party line vote. Stephen, I've been involved in politics since 1982 in West Virginia. I've been Secretary of State. I've been a state senator. I was a House of Delegate member. I was governor for 2 terms. I never heard the term. I said, Harry, what's that mean? He said, Joe, all the Democrats got to vote for this. I said, is there a law or a rule that I don't know about? He said, no, we're just going to hold together. All of us going to stick together. I said, let me read the bill and I'll get back to you. Tapped him on the shoulder. I said, Harry, on my best day, I can't sell this crap in West Virginia.
Wow.
He got all huffy puffy. I said, well, I don't work for you, Harry. You didn't hire me. You can't fire me. I don't work for you. I don't work for the president. I can't explain this in West Virginia. Those are people I work for. I'm not voting for it. And that's how I started my career in the Senate.
So knowing that, writing this book, surmising that you believe that most Americans share your level of thinking, why did you depart from the Senate?
42 years. I'm 78 years old.
You look good. You sound good. And we've had other elected officials, dare I say, a bit older than you, sir. I mean, that's not an excuse.
Well, for 42 years, I just said I got a little bit of life left into me. I've got grandchildren. I just want to enjoy life a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it was just driving me crazy to do that. Let me just tell you where this country is. The Democrat, registered Democrats, are, you know, in America that participate in the national elections. About 23 to 24% are registered Democrats. Mm-hmm. About 26 to 28% registered Republicans. The majority, close to 50%, are registered like I am, no party affiliation, which we call independents. And think about the last election, Stephen. In 2024, you only heard about 7 battleground states. The other 43 were predetermined. All the money, all the eyes were on 7 battleground states. Whether you win or you lose. Now, guess what? That means there's very independent people there. They vote their conscience, what they think's right or wrong. They only had 2 choices because of the primary process. Takes all that away. This book gets into the problems we have, how you can fix those problems. And I have a 501c4 with my daughter, Heather, called Americans Together. Get on that broadcast. Get on that email address on our website.
Give the email address again, please. Give the email address again.
American AmericansTogether.org.
AmericansTogether.org.
AmericansTogether.org. It'll tell you, it'll show you things you've never seen. It'll tell you exactly where you live, what kind of government you have, what you can expect, whether you have a closed primary, open primary. What I was getting to is you have 160 million people vote in the last election. There was only two primaries, a Democrat and Republican primary, to speak of. And together, that's only about 20 million voters. So 20 million people and two parties, which I call duopoly businesses, the Democrat corporation and the Republican corporation, they have locked it down. You can't get in their primary process. An independent like me, or we're trying to have a third party, makes it almost impossible. And that's not a representative form of government, because I can't vote in my own state. If I saw a good Republican I wanted to vote for in West Virginia, they say, oh, Joe, you're an independent, registered. You're not registered a Republican. You can't vote in our primary. The primary should be open for everybody to vote in.
I totally agree with
everybody
that.
Everybody can vote in any primary you want. That would take all this stereotype away.
Not only that, it will give us real candidates instead of people feigning like they're really justified to be there. I think back to Kamala Harris, how basically we all waited for Joe Biden to step away. Then he steps away in July. There's no room for a primary. And conveniently, Kamala Harris ends up as the Democratic nominee. All right.
Even
go ahead.
I begged for a 30-day primary. I said, have a mini primary. Because what happened, the Democrats were always saddled with everything they didn't like about President Biden. A primary could have cleansed a lot of that, even right. If it was only 30 days. People could have talked about the issues and wouldn't have been looking like, well, we're all cohesing around and defending what they didn't like. You know, that was just unbelievable. It really was.
Let me ask you this question, because you changed your party affiliation from Democrat to Independent in 2024, but felt you should have switched parties in 2016 when Trump was elected. You said that. Explain why.
Well, my state has changed completely. But you see, Stephen, I never did think the identity of your political affiliation changed you as a person. Mm-hmm. You're going to be Stephen A. no matter what, whether right. You're Democrat, Republican, Independent. And today, you are stereotyped. They identify you by, are you got a D by your name, an R by your name, an I by your name? They're trying to identify who you are. And I said, I never thought that way. I grew up in a Democratic household, probably because my grandfather started out when the Great Depression and FDR saved him. And that loyalty factor, West Virginia was all Democrat until 2014. Now it's all Republican. So yes, if I was looking for my own political salvation, I should have changed to be a Republican, okay? I didn't. I told my Republican friends, I said, you all won't like me anymore than Democrats like me. I'm not gonna do everything you want. I'm not gonna vote for everything just because you all put it up. I would try to change things, make it better, and I would work with the other side. As a Democrat, Stephen, I have never met a Republican I didn't like. I've never met a Republican that was always wrong. That's what they try to sell you. And I've never met a Democrat that had all the answers. But I work together with both. Mm. So this whole thing, we've got to break it somehow, because the people have to understand the most unusual part of our whole democracy is we believe that we can govern ourselves. Our founding fathers said, you all can do it. You'll pick the right person that represents you and the way you want to live your life. And I told the Democratic Party in West Virginia, they said, what happened to the West Virginia Democrats? I said, nothing. They wonder what happened to the Washington Democrats. Mm. Washington Democrats, my West Virginia people, believe that you spend more effort, resources, and time and money on able-bodied, capable people that don't work or won't work than you do on those who do. And you treat basically West Virginia, people in West Virginia who are coal miners and factory workers, like a returning Vietnam veteran. They have done everything they can. Everything was asked them. They did the heavy lifting, the dangerous jobs, helped build this country. They mined the coal, made the steel, built the guns and ships. They did everything. Now they're not good enough, green enough, clean enough, or smart enough. You threw them by the wayside. So you left him behind. They didn't leave you. You left him behind.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, too. And I'll tell you this, you know, talk about, again, you're an independent and you were once a Democrat. And so many times we hear people talking today, they're critical of the president, who I believe deserves it, by the way. But it's not like the Democratic Party should be absolved. And I hearken back to what you mentioned in your book. And by the way, we're talking to Joe Manchin, the author of Dead Center, in defense of common sense, right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. You're critical of President Trump, but your most biting criticisms are directed at leaders of your own party, including former President Barack Obama and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. You wrote this, "I don't say this lightly, but under the leadership of President Barack Obama and Majority Leader Harry Reid and later President Biden and Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrats have systematically tried to weaken the very guardrails that have protected our democracy for generations, all in the name of advancing their agenda." I want you to elaborate on that, sir, because a lot of people obviously don't gravitate to that.
Let me just say this. Barack Obama is a very good person. Mm-hmm. I knew him when he was a state senator and when he was a U.S. senator. And I worked with him because he came and represented the coal state, like Illinois. They had a big coal area in southern Illinois, mm-hmm. and a lot of West Virginia workers worked there. So we had a lot in common, worked together. He becomes the nominee for the president in 2008. And then all of a sudden, coal was a nemesis for the whole country. I says, my goodness, at least if you're going to change and go to renewables and you're going to get away from fossil altogether, make sure you don't leave them behind. Give them something, bring right. something back so we can have a job. These people, their whole lives are generations in their culture. And so if that wrote us off, and they started putting benchmarks for us to meet with technology that hadn't been done. We had no technology to meet the benchmarks we were supposed to. And I said, if it's not feasible, it's not reasonable. So that was that. How are you leaving these workers behind without any opportunity for them to continue in the areas where they have made their living and produce for this country? So that was it. And then the other thing was, is that they took the work ethic away. And I'll give you a couple of great examples.
I'm looking for them. Bring them.
Okay. Don't you think that if we're going to give child credits and child support, that people should be working? If people aren't working, sitting home, should we be sending them checks to watch their children?
No.
Okay. That's all I said saying. And they went crazy on me. I said, you people nuts. I said, and also from welfare, when I was governor, I went to Mike Leavitt at that time under George Bush. And I said, give me a waiver. You're making me under welfare take care of a healthy poor person the way I have a moral obligation to take care of a very sick poor person. I can't do both. They gave me a waiver. And I was able to put in Mountain Choices. I was helping people get skill sets, teaching them how to take care of themselves and go back out into the workforce. Guess what happened the first day Barack got elected and took office? They called me and took it away from me.
Mm. The first day in office.
So I,
His first day in office.
I was called by Kathleen Sebelius. But then the first day or two, took it out. It was gone. So they took my waiver away. Maybe they took, I don't know if anybody else had a waiver or not, but I know I did. And I thought we were doing pretty good with it. But I just told them, I said, guys, and then on top of that, I said, the Constitution, Stephen, says you have the pursuit of happiness. I take an oath to make sure you're able to pursue happiness in your life. Don't care race, don't care sexual preferences, don't care anything. Mm-hmm. You have that right. And I'm going to protect it. Just don't make me believe I'm out of whack if I don't agree with you and make me take it home or put it in my schools or put it in my church. That's all.
My last question to you, sir, would be this. As we stand here today and this book is coming out, this book is out, okay?
Yeah.
Who do you believe is going to embrace what you're saying in the book more? Who's going to reject it more, the Democrats or the Republicans?
I think both of them. These are both of my friends. I've worked with my friends on both sides of the aisle. I'm talking to them. In the last two or three days, I've been calling and talking to an awful lot of them, begging them. You've got to find a pathway forward. You can't make the country suffer for your lack of ability to do your job. That's exactly what it's about. And my Republican friends, I've told all of them, I said, guys, you're in the majority right now. You have the responsibility of running this government. You got to find a way to keep it open. So it's on everybody to work together. Because you're both going to look very bad and you really haven't done your job. That makes you think, do I have the right representative? So you got a 2026 election coming up. I think this book will tell you, how do you come from a town of 400 people, a little mining community, and find yourself sitting at the seat of power in the White House and have to tell the president, Mr. President, I am so sorry. I cannot support what you're asking me to support. It doesn't make sense back home. And the people I represent do not support that. You have to do that with an awful lot of respect for the office. And I've always said this, if you can say something, if I got to tell you no or tell you something you don't want to hear with a tear in my eye, you've got to know it hurts me as much as your friend to tell you can't do what you want as it is for you to receive the information. Today, they want to tell you with glee. They're gleaming. This is wonderful. Yeah, screw you. I'm not going to do that.
Wow.
That's not the way you operate. That's not leadership.
And you're right about that. Joe Manchin, former senator out of West Virginia, the author of the new memoir called Dead Center, In Defense of Common Sense. It's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. Feel free to call us your home. We welcome back anytime, sir. Thank you very, very much for coming on.
It's always good to be with you. I enjoy your show very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much. One and only Joe Manchin right here with Stephen A. Dead Center. That's the name of the book, In Defense of Common Sense. Go get it. 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. That is the number, the straight shooter with Stephen A. Back with calls and more in a minute.